trust.
Hi, this is Simon Pegg, and you're listening to Celluloid Heroes.
Hello, and welcome to Celluloid Heroes. It's the 21st of July, isn't it?
It certainly is. 2011.
Yeah.
And
it is the end of Potter.
Yeah.
Once
after
and for
this,
all.
No more discussion of Potter ever again.
No.
I know some people will be very happy to see the back of Potter.
Yeah.
It does really seem to polarise people on Twitter and stuff.
It does, and you know what? I very much enjoy the franchise looking back. But at the same time...
As a whole, there's more positives than negatives, I would say.
Yes.
So we got the end of that, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2. Mm. We've also got Cars 2, the new Pixar sequel that nobody asked for.
Right.
And we got Beginners, the new Mike Mills film with Melanie Laurent and Christopher Plummer and Ewan McGregor. And we've also got another film of which I can't remember. Which
Horrible
is
Bosses.
Edward. Horrible Bosses. That's the one, which is... The new
hilarious comedy. Laugh out loud comedy.
Yeah. Is that what it says on the poster?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we'll see about that. we'll start with Potter.
Yes.
Jump straight in.
Yeah, just jump in the deep end.
So, you know, not, I mean, we don't, the wonderful thing about having to review Potter is you don't have to worry about plot synopsis. You don't have to worry about giving away spoilers because I'm pretty sure that everyone has already seen it.
Unless you've been in a coma for the last 10 years, we don't have to tell you who stars in it.
I mean, you do get these people who say, I haven't read the books, but I've read the films. I haven't read the books either, okay, but I know what happens.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that Voldemort might, I'm not saying he does, die at the end.
Yeah.
So if anyone is going to be that pathetic to write in and say, oh, you gave away the end, then I don't care.
Yeah.
So, you know, we got everyone back. And we pretty much got every single person who's been in it throughout the whole thing. I mean, even if they're on screen for about 30 seconds, we got Jim Broadbent and...
Even Emma Thompson.
Even Emma Thompson and Gary Oldman and all that lot.
Yeah, yeah. They all end up.
They're all back. Mm. And so it picks up immediately after the last one left off.
After Dobby.
So the basic...
Kicked his clogs away.
Exactly.
He died.
We've got, so it's basically the Battle of Hogwarts, The Last Stand. And surprisingly, it's actually the shortest of all the films.
Hmm.
It does make you think that it's a very good idea that they did split the last book into two films. Because the third one was about 2¾ hours, wasn't it?
The first part one?
The part one, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was long.
And this one's 130 minutes.
Just over 2 hours.
So just over 2 hours. But it actually, I mean, it does fly by.
Because
David Yates does very well to
keep the momentum
sort of
going.
Exactly. I mean, there's not much in the way of plot, really. It's more of a sort of frantic chase around to destroy the last, how many are there? Four at the beginning.
Horcruxes. Yeah.
But it does, you know, there's not enough Alan Rickman again.
No.
He is in it, and it's a very pivotal part.
Yeah, and so we waited 10 years to see Snape's memory.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And, I mean... as much as Rickman you're going to get in that book, that was where you really wanted to see him.
Yeah.
And
I mean, there is a bit. Let's just set it up because we got a clip here of one of his rare appearances.
If anyone here has any knowledge of Mr. Potter's movements this evening, I invite them to step forward. Now.
It seems, despite your exhaustive defensive strategies, you still have a bit of a security problem, Headmaster.
Okay, well, that's actually finished before I thought it would. He actually goes, and I'm afraid it's quite extensive. So there.
Good accent.
Good actor.
Yeah. Good
well,
actor.
You know, they should actually be quite happy. Because you do see in this, like, Neville Longbottom obviously has...
Yeah, played by Matthew Lewis. He must have been over the moon when he read. Because obviously when he did the first film, they hadn't finished writing the
books. He was just the little gimp.
He was just the gimp. And then when he read... imagine when the seventh book came out, all his friends were like, have you read it? It's like, no. It's like, well, Neville kicks some ass.
Yeah.
It's like, you got a great part.
I'm just not as the buck-tooth little loser anymore.
And also, I mean, he grew.
He really did. But all the you know, you forget how many, like, Luna and even what's Draco Malfoy's real name in real life?
Oh, I don't
Robert
know.
Patrick. He was in Terminator 2. It's not him. I can't remember. But yeah, I mean, the studio must be pretty happy with the way that they've all turned out.
Yeah.
With one exception for me, and the most important one, I just can't deal with Daniel Radcliffe. I just think he's such a bad actor.
Well, it's interesting.
Such a like drama school overacted, like overly enunciated, and like just looks like he's going to have a tantrum all the time. Like.
Well, you know, it doesn't get to me. I mean,
yeah.
You can understand that he was forcefully made into an actor, you know, from a 12-year-old that looks like he looked like Potter and happened to be a friend of Dave. Well, look, let me get it straight. I mean, David Heyman, who is the sort of the reason why this happened.
Yeah,
he's the producer behind the whole thing. I mean, they were casting for ages, and this happens that one of his friends' son.
Yeah, because his mum's a casting agent.
He just met his friend, and the son was there, and it was Daniel Radcliffe, and he was like, "Hang on, that's Potter." I mean, looking for ages, and that.
Why didn't that happen to me?
Yeah, why wasn't I David Heyman's
friend's
son?
Now worth $50 million.
Yeah, but so basically, what I'm saying, I mean, they're all pushed into acting, but that's why. Yeah. He is what he is.
I know, obviously, but you know, I'm glad they didn't change the actors, put it that way. But I mean, Hermione and Ron, I think, turned out all right. It's only him that I can't really deal with. But it does turn, because there's so much going on and there's so many characters all around, it's basically, you know, to have someone like Helena Bonham Carter in your film for about 30 seconds, you know, no other film in the world would be able to do that. No. It's pretty nuts. I mean, I don't think Jim Broadbent or Jason Isaacs even have a line.
Hardly have a line. But I must say, Helen Paul Garza, she just is so good. I think she's one of, if not the best actress, young actress around.
It definitely was, that part is made for her.
Yeah. And even when she's playing Hermione, you know.
Yeah.
That just shows her versatility. And I mean, what put the biggest smile on my face, and I hope it was the same of you, was Maggie Smith.
Yeah, as ever.
I mean, she is a stone cold brilliant,
and she's old, very old as well.
She's
to
getting
be doing.
On.
I think she must be 80.
But you know, her character, I forget her name. She's
McGonagall.
McGonagall, the witch.
Yeah,
and she's got a good sense of humour considering what was going on at the time.
Yeah,
she always had a quip at the end of, I don't know, the scene when people were dying.
Yeah.
Which is, I found quite funny. But I love Maggie Smith.
And Kelly MacDonald turns up as well. They're still introducing new characters at this stage.
Right at the end.
Floaty Kenny MacDonald turned up and got a bit angry.
Yeah, she was a bit livid.
But yeah, I mean, it just, the first one was on telly this weekend.
Mm.
And I watched a little bit of it before it became too much. Those Chris Columbus ones were so dreadful. And it is wonderful that they turned it into such a crowd pleaser. Because if they had stayed at that sort of, you know, saccharine level. Like David Yates really has to collect a lot of well-deserved plaudits for these, because he really did change the direction of them.
And he did. I think Prison of Azerbaijan, whatever. Azerbaijan. The Prison of Azerbaijan, which is a great film coming out soon. That turned it.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it sort of
went backwards a little bit in the fourth. And then has David Yates done?
He did the sixth.
Half-Blood Prince was the first one he did, wasn't it? Yeah. Because I've loved him from State of Play and things that he did ages ago, and I just think definitely did a good, and it's definitely a much better film than the part one, but that sort of, you know, is to be expected. Just because it winds up, and it
I'm
does.
I'm not sure. I watched part one on the weekend, and
it's too long.
It is slightly long, and the biggest problem with part one is it doesn't finish because it's part one.
Yeah.
Part two, I thought it was equally as entertaining. But if anything, rushed.
Yeah.
Even with the two films, they still miss so much out.
But you can't really have it either way. If you think about it as being sort of 10-hour, whatever it is, 15 hours, 16 hours of cinema, like an ending, it's like the people who have problems with the end of The Lord of the Rings are like, oh, the ending went on for 40 minutes. It's like, yeah, but it's a 9-hour film. So you can have a 45-minute ending. Well, this did sort of, and then there is that. It's very finite in its epilogue. I don't know how much we can really talk about the epilogue, though.
No, I mean, we can say that right at the end, it goes 19 years' time.
Yeah, yeah.
And I didn't read any of the books, but when the seventh book came out, I read the last chapter.
Did you? He spoils for.
Just so I could get an idea of what was going on. I didn't get anything because it was 19 years later.
Yeah. So Ron slipped in a puddle and died.
Yeah, well, he didn't.
Yeah.
But I was looking forward to seeing how they would, let's say, recreate the characters.
Yeah, exactly.
And to be honest,
I thought they did an all right job.
Did an all right job, but
as well as they
my cinema. Firstly, it was the most social screening I've ever been to. It's ridiculous. Yeah. It's probably part of the reason. Part of the reason is because it was in Fulham Broadway, and if you,
was it in the weekend?
No, it was on Monday evening. And if you're not if you're not familiar with the Fulham area of London, it's very sort of yuppie. And
young mums and children.
Yeah, but there, I mean, there were lots of what you call Sloanes there. I think a friend of mine, a lady friend of mine, has watched all seven films with her friends who read the books. They read the books together and they went to see every film. So it's like a date, a dinner date.
How sickening.
There are about five independent groups of them.
Yeah.
Of just blonde, highlighted bimbos. All around going, oh, is it exciting? Is it exciting? And then there are a few more and then there are a few sort of boyfriends dragged along.
Yeah.
Like, going like, it was like watching it at school. Like, getting people like, go on, Harry, go on, kill him. And then when the 19 year later scene came on, they were all, I mean, a lot of people couldn't hold it. And they were, I mean, everyone was laughing. And I think that's what they wanted, really.
I'm glad I didn't see it like that.
Yeah. You know what the most annoying thing is? I bumped into an old friend at the cinema, and I'd chosen to see the over 18 screening.
Yeah.
The adult screening.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, which one are you watching? Because I'm watching it. And this one, so I'll watch it with you. And I made the mistake because it was actually full to the brim. And
if
actually,
only we had some way of knowing what it sounded like.
Well, I was so upset and slightly bored that I filmed a bit.
Filmed it or recorded it?
Recorded
it. Don't say filmed in cinema. No, that's not good.
I recorded it and I must say I was scared shitless recording it. I thought it was going to be sent out. But here it is. So, it's a bit annoying. I mean, to be honest, this.
You know, what point is this?
This just is just before the trailers. Film. I mean, this carried on through, you know, Mr. Popper's Penguins, and we can repeat that.
Yeah.
Mr. Popper's Penguins. You know, they weren't very happy about that trailer.
Okay.
Someone's watched half that.
That didn't sound too intrusive.
It doesn't because of the recording, because it's not really picking it up. But it really was intrusive. But anyway, that was annoying. But I suppose it gave a bit of atmosphere to the end of the Potter franchise.
Yeah, well, I suppose it made it more of an event.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, I'm not really interested in it being an event, to be honest.
No.
Well, I mean, I had a choice of seeing it at a certain time, which was convenient for me, or a time in 2D that was less convenient. And like a fool, I went for the 3D.
I saw it in 2D, and I'm over the
moon.
And
it's the worst. It's the worst ever.
Okay.
It is literally, because it's, all, you know, they were filmed back to back, these two. So obviously this one, you know, was not designed in
it's
any way to
3D.
Be in 3D.
Yeah.
And there's a bit where the Warner Brothers logo comes towards you at the beginning, which is like, oh, wow, that 3D's all right.
Yeah.
And then after that, nothing.
No, because
and because the texture of the film is so dark anyway, it's all set at night and, you know, in dark rooms and castles.
Deathly
you cannot
Hallows.
See anything. And retrofitted the 3D actually looks more blurry when you take them off to normal ones, because usually I just take the glasses off. But this you couldn't because it was so blurry, it gave me a headache. And
so
these were with the proper active shutter, 100 quid a pair sort of thing.
stuck in a rock and a hard place, really.
Yeah.
I saw it in all its 2D delights. And it was, you know, lovely.
So if for some reason you haven't seen it yet, Potter fans, don't you dare go and see it then.
Don't be idiots.
Yeah, sure.
Don't be fools.
So, I mean, there's not really too much to say about it that we haven't said about all the others. But at the end of the day, it's the best one, I think, for me. And it's sort of the best paced. It's got a very satisfying ending. And it does very much feel, love or hate them, like the end of an era. And they get that done superbly well. Special mention for the whole thing has to go to Ralph Fiennes and Alan Rickman.
Yeah.
Who are,
and Maggie. And I'll tell
Maggie,
you who else. I'll tell you who else. In the first scene in this film is Warwick Davies. He plays two characters. And that
he does play two.
Yeah.
Okay, because I thought I was being sort of dwarfist.
Yeah.
Because he was on screen, I was like, oh, that's that's Warwick Davis.
Yeah.
And then there was another character, and it's like, oh,
that's
Warwick Davis. Like, oh no,
yeah.
I've been.
To be honest, I thought that.
I obviously think they all look alike.
I felt bad about it. And the interesting thing is Warwick Davis's own company is a casting company where he casts for fantasy films or any film for that matter. Using dwarfs and other.
Imminently lampooned in the new BBC Two series.
Yes, well, yeah, that will be interesting when that comes along. But, you know, I mean, I thought that character right at the beginning, the Goblin, was fantastic. A really good scene to kick the film. You think it's the best? I think I still love, as I said, The Prisoner of Azerbaijan. And the I also think that the eight films in themselves can be seen as a trilogy. I mean, Half-Blood Prince is great. I really enjoyed watching that the other day. But in terms of, if you come out of the actual Potter world and what it looked like, what it's done for British cinema is incredible. Not only has it showcased all our most talented actors to the world, not like most people need to see them, it's also, we've now got these two massive studios in the UK, which have been kept and Warner Brothers are keeping, and now we're going to have so much more money pumped in to British cinema.
And you have to take your hat off a little bit to J.K. Rowling for putting her foot down so adamantly, saying we want them in Britain, all British cast.
Yeah, J.K. Rowling and David Heyman. I mean, he is the guy who's quite interesting. He's the son of two producers, lived in America, came over to the UK to start a production company, simply adapting books to films, which is great because so many authors get scared when their books get touched by any Hollywood studio. So it's nice to know there's a production company out there that can actually look after your book. Anyway, he has a pile. It's quite an interesting story because he had a pile of books. He had a pile of top priority, medium priority, and low priority. And when he was given this book before it was published, and he whacked it on the low priority. He whacked Pot on the low priority shelf right at the bottom. And his secretary needed something to read over the weekend. She chose that out of a chance, came back and said it's amazing. He went back to it. Before it was published, was like, right, we need to get this. Spoke to Rowling. And from that,
so that's obviously why they came out so quickly as well.
And he nurtured the whole thing.
Yeah.
And good on him.
Well done him.
And fantastic. And he's got quite good friends with Alfonso, who did the third film, and they're going to do something together soon.
I mean, we could be here in 10 years' time talking about the next Potter. I wouldn't be surprised.
If it's the same cast, I said this when we reviewed the first one. The only thing I'm disappointed is in the last one, how they didn't really have sort of a montage of a scene to show the three children grow up, you know.
Sort of
fade in and fade out of each film to see how they've literally grown up, because I think that's one of the most special things about it. So you can watch the first one and see Radcliffe as a 12-year-old who can't act.
Yeah, there's and no
then,
other
and
films
then watch him as a 19-year-old as it, a man who's slightly better at acting but still hasn't mastered it. I think that's fantastic in itself.
Yeah. Okay.
And as for Yates, we'll come on to him in the movie news.
Yeah, good. I'm looking forward to that. Right, well, that's quite enough, Potter. We can put Potter to bed now forever.
Off you go.
Bye-bye,
Potter.
Way
past your bedtime, Potter.
So let's do a bit of movie news.
Yeah. This is the news. Surrounding film.
Okay, movie news time. Quite a lot to get through today.
Yeah.
Do you want to start?
I'll start from my source, which is absolutely...
Your special source.
My special source. It's totally sourced by me. The film sourced totally by me. Okay, so I've got a few things. Firstly, The Secret Life of Walter Mitty, which is... I think it's originally...
it's a short story.
It was originally a short story. I think it might have been a 1940s film. About this sort of fantasist, Walter Mitty.
Yeah.
Ben Stiller, his name was always down to act on it. And people like Spielberg and Ron Howard had all been sort of floating around the idea of directing. But he is now in talks, Stiller, to direct and act in it. So that could be an interesting one. That could be a sort of more sort of grown-up picture from Stiller. Because obviously he started with, was it Reality Bites? That's what it was called? With Ethan Hawke. It was a great directorial debut, and then he went on to do Cable Guy, and then he went sort of silly, crazy, and funny. Yeah, but funny, but sort of silly funny.
Yeah.
So that could be interesting. Could see a bit of a grown up Stiller there. Next is Francis Ford Coppola.
Yeah. Who hasn't done anything? Well, nothing significant for a long time
since Jack in 1996.
Yeah, well, there's been a few little forays here.
Found out today. It's remarkable. If you didn't know that Francis Ford Coppola, the guy behind Apocalypse Now and the Godfather trilogy and Rumblefish, also did a sort of family romp with Robin
it's
Williams.
It's really bad.
It's pretty bad. It's not quite as bad as Patch Adams, but it's
just a bad big.
It's a bad big, yeah. But he's got this new sort of fantasy film, and fantasy in the same way as we'll come on to Hugo is fantasy. Fantastical. But it's got Ella Fanning and someone else.
Yeah.
Okay. You can find now. But that the first pictures of that have been revealed, so go and sniff them out on the website.
Good. Yeah. A little smelly. Anything else that you've got?
Yeah, okay, well, carry on.
Do you want me to do one?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
The Beauty and the Beast.
Yes.
Have you got this one as well?
No, but I heard about this.
Well, Guillermo del Toro is a big fan of the original, the first original film. And he's been trying to get it off the ground. And it looks like it's happening now with him in a producing role, not a directing role, but starring. I said we'd put Potter to bed.
Yeah.
But Emma Watson. Oh, no. What's her name?
Yeah.
It's Emma Watson. Yeah.
I had this argument. It's Emily Watson.
Yeah.
Who's a fantastic actress. And Emma Watson, of course, who's going to be, hopefully, my future wife.
Okay. So yeah, that's one to look forward to. We gave you quite a lot of Bond news last week, yeah. With people like Javier Bardem and Naomi Harris signed on. This week, another addition to the cast in the form of Reese Ifans, which is quite interesting. I don't think he's going to be M.
No, but, I imagine he'll be like the crazy henchman.
He might well be. He's not very threatening, though, is he? But the
maybe
best
he's
ones
got like a metal skull or something. Yeah. And he can headbutt people really hard, I don't know.
And just quickly, Joe Johnston, who's done things like Jumanji and The Rocketeer and will be doing Captain America, which I'm going to see tomorrow night. We'll have that for you next week. He is doing Boba Fett. Well, this is rumoured that he's doing a Star Wars spin-off movie about Boba Fett, the bounty hunter from the last two of the original Star Wars films.
Okay.
So who knows, that could be interesting.
That could be interesting. And now let's talk about Tarantino's latest project.
Yeah.
Django Unchained.
Yeah, well, we got a bit of news in the form of Kevin Costner on board, but just bring us up to speed for those who don't know.
So it's a film about slavery back in America.
Yeah, it's not
back
about Django
Reinhardt. No, it's not. Or it's,
unfortunately.
Yeah, no, and it's not Rango's brother, the Nickelodeon sequel. It's Tarantino's project. DiCaprio is the lead, one of the leads, and he's the sort of horrible farmer that owns some, you know, that has these slaves, and the main slave, Django, is played by Jamie Foxx, with something to do with his wife going missing, or maybe DiCaprio wants his wife or something. Anyway, I don't know. You got Christoph Waltz in it, which is exciting. Samuel L. Jackson's in it. Costner's just is potentially on board playing some sort of evil sort of slave tradesman.
Yeah.
And we've also got Christoph Waltz, which is great.
I wonder whether he's going to be a sort of maniacal.
German
sort of bad guy.
Yeah, but yeah, I'm sure he's German. But that's exciting. That's coming out Christmas next year. So I'm sure we'll get more and more about that
Christmas
as it comes. Yeah. So that'll be exciting. And also Jack the Giant Killer. We talked about Jack and the Beanstalk.
Yeah, we have.
It's been cast now. So it's pretty English heavy cast. But we know who Jack is.
Well, yeah,
it's Nicholas Holt.
Oh, right, okay.
Not Robin Williams or yourself. It's a shame it's not Robin Williams. And Warwick Davies is in it. Again, we talk about Warwick Davies. And
He's challenging Mark Strong for...
I know, but I have a feeling that he might be the giant. I mean...
Really?
Yeah.
Well, why not?
It'd be... I mean...
It's 2011, guys.
Yeah, that can happen. I don't know what they can do about that. So finally, before we go down to the trailer yard...
Well, I've got a couple more, but let's.
We'll knock Yates on the head.
Yeah.
Because have you got anything about Yates?
Cause no.
We've got three things he could potentially be doing. Firstly, the Stand, which is Stephen King's film.
Yeah.
Stephen King's book. He might turn that into a trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
I've forgotten to write the other one down, but the other one is. I mean, I hope I pronounce it Sicero, Cicero. Which was originally written as a 70s TV program. Sicero, maybe.
Yeah.
Originally written as a TV pilot in the 70s, didn't take off. It's the life of Al Capone.
Okay.
Yeah. And he's hoping to get Tom Hardy on board, who is Mad Max. You know how we were talking about Mad Max?
Yeah,
he is Mad Max.
Oh, right, okay.
Which is great for Hardy. Hardy's going to have, but he's going to have a lot. His work cut out.
He'll turn up later in the trailer trash as well. A few more. The Lone Ranger, Helena Bonham Carter, is now involved with that. No real surprises there. But the most surprising news of the week, Captain Planet, the movie.
Yeah, this passed me by. I'm excited. But unfortunately, we don't know any more about it.
No, I mean, it'll be dreadful.
But I like dreadful films.
Yeah, well, let's do some trailers.
This is Trailer Trash.
Okay, so two big ones out today for me. Obviously, if you go to the website, did Dark Knight come out in time for last week's show? I can't remember.
No,
it didn't.
No, you
so
talked
Dark
about
Knight
it.
Rises.
You mentioned that you've
seen it. Oh, yeah, because I'd already seen it, yeah. Well, The Dark Knight Rises is now up and running on the interweb. So you can go to www.celluloidheroesradio.com/trailers to find it there, where you can find all of these trailers.
Yeah.
So that's quite exciting. There's also...
quickly on that, we think it's Gary Oldman in the bed.
I'm pretty sure it is, yeah. I mean, it can't be anyone else, surely.
Yeah, we don't think it's anyone else, but...
It's a sort of middle-aged man with a moustache with a sort of cockneyfied Chicago accent.
His accent sounds more like his accent than Hannibal, more than anything.
Yeah, yeah.
Hello! Certainly Gary Oldman, though.
Yeah. There's also The Thing, the new remake of The Thing, starring Mary Elizabeth... I can't remember. You know the one.
May Marion.
From Scott Pilgrim.
Okay. Oh yes.
Ramona and Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah.
And John Carter, Andrew Stanton's new film, which is very exciting. John Carter is sort of what many people regard to be the first sci-fi novel. It's usually called John Carter of Mars, about a guy who's running away from being chased by some Indians, hides in a cave, and magically wakes up in the future on Mars. Where his human attributes are basically superhuman in the atmosphere of Mars. And so it's much loved, but Andrew Stanton's got a really good grasp of sci-fi. As people who have seen WALL-E, which he directed, he also did Finding Nemo, but those films very much hark back to the classic sci-fi films like Silent Running and 2001 and stuff. So this looks really interesting. It's on a huge scale, and it looks like they might just pull it off.
So that can be quite interesting.
Talking of things on a huge scale... another one that came out is Aardman's new project, their third feature film after Chicken Run and Wallace and Gromit.
Yeah.
And this is called The Pirates.
Band of the Misfits,
yeah. Which looks great.
It looks fantastic.
I think it looks really fun. I mean, I audibly laughed more in this trailer than I did in a film where I'll come to review.
And this
trailer is 1 minute long.
and it looks like we might see... Hugh Grant making us laugh again, because he's in the lead role.
He is. His first ever voice role as well, which is quite surprising.
Which is interesting. I think this could be his last role before he goes into politics.
Oh, please.
He's not far off, though.
Him
and
Coogan.
He's not far off, yeah. Well, I don't think Coogan will make it.
Yeah.
He's not as sort of grounded.
And then another one, which we sort of have a difference of opinion on, which came out literally... Hours ago, was The Amazing Spider-Man.
The
reboot with Andrew Garfield. So it actually shows quite a lot for a first trailer. So it takes us through the high school. We get the insect bite. We also see that Mary Jane is nowhere to be seen. So they're going with, as true to the comic books, with Emma Stone playing Gwen Stacy. And, you know, you think it looks a bit disappointing, you're saying?
First, I didn't like the sort of CGI-ness of it. It looks bad.
That running scene.
Yeah,
looks a bit bad.
That's all I want to say. That's all I've got against it. I think they really have gone too computery. The thing I love about Spider-Man is you've got a chance for stuntmans to really get stuck in, you know, and swing across buildings. I don't think that's going to happen, which is a shame.
Do you think that it's also a bit of a case that the first one is so fresh in people's memories?
Yeah, I think it's very...
I was talking to someone about it earlier, and it's actually no difference in the gap between Batman Forever and Batman Begins.
Yeah.
But because that one was sort of in the new vein of, like, post-millennial... It was the first of those really big superhero reboots.
Yeah. And the thing about Batman Forever, I mean, that it was a completely different type of film.
Batman
Forever and Batman Robin, you like take them together.
Yeah, they were much more of the Adam West camp style.
They're very camp, very children's.
But the first Spider-Man film's quite like that.
Yeah, but it's
the second one that gets a little bit darker. But Batman Begins was one of the, and The Bournes especially, were those things that made these action movies a lot darker and people like sort of demanded a gritty realism. And stuff. For the first Spider-Man, it's quite fantastical and quite colourful and generally quite sort of Americana.
But it is Americana,
maybe it's,
for sure.
Maybe it's because we grew up with that. It's more fresh in our minds. I don't know.
Maybe. But I mean, I think so. Personally, I think it's a bit... Well, what it is...
Three was so dreadful, they couldn't go on with a new actor and make another one.
No, you're right there. And I think what it is that the sort of... You can't really change the beginning of a reboot of Spider-Man. So it seems a bit too carbon copy. But I'm after the first 15, 20 minutes, we'll go on. And also,
you get a bit of young Peter Parker prequel.
Yeah, and also stuff. you get an idea that his dad's a bit more
a character,
and his past might have something to do with Peter Parker's future.
Yeah, it's
very
much about backstory, isn't it? And stuff.
So that could, I'd be interested to see the story, but I think it is this, like, when you saw when the spider bites him, it was like, well, you could have literally just taken that. Give me Tobey Maguire, you wouldn't notice. So maybe the similarities of the beginning, whereas, the two different Batmans, I mean, they're so different as well.
Yeah.
So maybe that's it. And I suppose if you think about it, the Batman, the Tim Burton franchise, between that and Batman Forever,
keen about Batman Returns, but the original Batman, the 1980 one, I really like. Mm. Okay, that was the movie news.
Have
you got more?
I've got bloody more. We've done Dark Knight Rises. Hugo, we haven't mentioned Hugo.
Sorry about that.
We should mention that. That's the trailer out. Looks like Sacha Baron Cohen's going to be playing a bit of a fool, a bit of a comedy relief to what it's going to be.
Friend of the show, Ray Winston, pops up.
Yeah, Ray Winston pops up.
And Chloe Moretz is doing what seems from the trailer to be a very good British accent.
And I'll tell you what else, an inside scoop. A friend of mine is now working on a new Dakota Fanning project, and she also has a flawless English accent.
How will she look these days? She must be going through like the peak of adolescence.
She must be pretty tall and spotty.
Yeah.
but I don't know, flat chested.
And sorry, anything else before we...
Yes, Contagion. More. Again, this was on our website, Contagion. Soderbergh. If that is his last project.
Steven Soderbergh's apparently last project.
That'd be interesting. It is, but that looked really gripping, actually. I really look at that. And then two more. Kill List. Ooh, which is a new British gritty drama, but it's like proper gritty. I think it's written and directed by the same guy. He might be wanting to be the new Meadows. I don't know, but it's very dark. It's basically about an ex-soldier who becomes a hitman, but it's very psychological. And it's played by the guy who, if you've seen Football Factory, Danny Dyer's best mate, who's actually quite good in it.
I've seen this trailer, actually. I saw it at a screening about a month ago.
It looks very psychological and dark.
It's quite sort of low budget, isn't it?
Yeah, relatively low budget. But the sort of hype behind it, and it's quite hard to take some certain hype seriously when very sort of independent films or independent reviewers like us have seen it. If it went intense by Celluloid Heroes to a nationwide screen, they'd be asking questions. At the moment, they will be, but they won't be soon. And the final one is Sean Penn's new film. And he's playing a goth, and it's called This Must Be the Place. And it's also got Frances McDormand in, and I think he'll be asking for an Oscar.
She needs to be good, because she really let herself down a couple of weeks ago in the film that cannot be named.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry about that. This is a very much indie take. I'm not sure if it's an Alice Cooper biopic, but certainly he looks a lot like him. Yeah. And he's got a very high voice, and he speaks like this. And his best friends, I'm not sure if he's a girlfriend, but the best friends of a traffic warden played by Frances McDormand.
He's such a little Oscar hog.
He's an Oscar suck-up.
Yeah.
I don't like him. But there we are. So check that out, because it looks a bit weird.
Okay, that was the news. Just quickly, also the UK trailer to The Last Circus, the clownsploitation film that I talked about a few weeks ago, is now on iTunes and on CelluloidHeroesRadio.com. More movie news next week.
Hi, this is Mark Zuckerberg. A lot of people know me for creating the website Facebook with my friend Justin Timberlake. But what a lot of people don't know is that my favorite website is CelluloidHeroesRadio.com.
Okay, Horrible Bosses, which...
Yeah, the Laugh Out Loud.
The Laugh Out Loud, in quotation marks, very much remain in those quotation marks. Please, Seth Gordon's new film. And he's not really known as a sort of comic guy. His most biggest success was with Freakonomics a couple of years ago. And so, as people know, it's about three horrible bosses played by Jennifer Aniston, Colin Farrell, and Kevin Spacey. And Jason Bateman and Jay Byrne and Steve Viber, I think is how you pronounce it, isn't it? They are employees of said horrible bosses, and they really don't like their horrible bosses because they're horrible.
Yeah.
And so Kevin Spacey is Jason Bateman's boss, who's sort of a slave-driving, real nasty executive guy. If you've seen the trailer, then you don't need to bother seeing the film, but B, he makes him drink whiskey in the morning by sort of, pressuring him to sort of fit in, and then publicly blames mistakes on his drinking problems. Jennifer Aniston plays a
nymphomaniac
dentist who, to be honest, I don't really have too much sympathy with this guy's problem.
I know.
So, Jennifer Aniston wants to have sex with me all the time.
It's like, yeah, I know.
Oh, dear.
Horrible boss. Blimey. Terrific boss.
And the last one is a sort of Tom Cruise in Tropic Thunder-esque, you know, lots of prosthetics, bald, racist, horrible, basically they call him the jerk. Like, my boss is a jerk, played by Colin Farrell, who sort of has a go at people in wheelchairs and stuff. So they concoct a plan to get rid of each other's bosses by hiring Jamie Foxx, who's called, Motherfucker Jones. And so there's lots of jokes. Basically, the funny stuff comes from the fact that he's called Motherfucker Jones in the same way that that they use sort of Captain Darling in Blackadder.
Yeah,
so it'd be like,
Greg,
oh, we didn't realise you were going to do that.
Focker.
And stuff.
Yeah, or Greg Focker in.
Well, let's not do it too much, because it takes a long time to bleep this stuff out. Yeah. You do usually don't say Focker, though.
I know, but I did say it then.
That was a very long production process when that came out at Christmas. Yeah. But basically, you know, if you've seen the trailer, you don't really need to see the film. There's sort of quite an interesting plot development when one of the bosses, shall we say, takes care of the other one, and you think, oh, maybe it'll all work out sort of like this. But it doesn't. It's completely restless and overladen with gags that don't really work. There's a sort of sneezing cocaine gag that's taken straight out of Annie Hall.
How dare they?
It's ridiculous, isn't it? And basically, you know, it's nothing you haven't seen before. I'm not going to say it's completely devoid of laughs, because it isn't. There are some bits in it where you might have a little bit of a giggle. There's a few cameos in it. Donald Sutherland turns up.
Does he die?
Anil Kapoor turns up. And a couple of people from The Wire. The best moment in it for me was when Bunk from The Wire turns up, as a policeman doing an interview as well. So I like that very much. Mm-hmm. It sort of has this arty slow-mo beginning, which you think, oh, maybe it's going to be sort of, you know, a little bit more stylish than your opening thing. But after the opening shot, they give up on that. Colin Farrell's actually quite good, but there's nowhere near enough of him. And all his best lines are actually in the
trailer.
Post-credit bloopers, they're not in the trailer. So basically, you know, Aniston, she's obviously trying to be a little bit of departure for her, because she says the F word a lot. Mm. And, you know, as I say, you can't really... But it's just like, come on, Jason Bateman, stop doing this. And just, you can't wait for the Arrested Development film to come out, because he's never topped it, really.
Yeah, and it's a real shame. And it's
sort of very flip-floppy in its morality, and changes from situation to the situation. But there's quite, I reckon there were 20 laughs in the screening.
Well, that's a lot of laughs.
Yeah, honest, and it was in a very small, it was Ritzy Screen 5, which is the best cinema screen in London. I've been to. It's amazing. Why? It's very small, maybe 30 people at tops, huge chairs with your own table.
Yeah, this sounds a bit like this executive
big,
place.
Big lazy boy, quite a small screen, but it's usually done for sort of industry screenings and stuff. But it was really... If it hadn't been for the fact that it was in such a lovely cinema, I would have thought of it a little...
If you're wondering where Jason Bateman's two friends came from...
Yeah.
Remember that film starring Justin Long about long-distance relationships?
Oh, yeah, that was long, wasn't it?
Yeah, which was a long time ago and was very long to watch. His two mates, his two buddies in that, were supposed to be the comic relief.
I think that was the first forfeit we ever did.
One of the first, if not the first. And his two buddies, the comic relief. Someone else? Is that Brat again?
Yeah. GBH. From last week. Anyway,
it sounds more like an ambulance than maybe he got hit by a car.
We need to get him back into our soundproof studio. It's just more spacious in here.
Yeah, it is. It's nicer here.
Put the fourth
and there's a bin. There's a bin.
There is a bin, so we can do our regular feature.
But yeah, those two, they're straight from that, and they weren't funny in that. So I imagine they weren't funny. And this Jay Burns guy's got, he thinks he's got his own type of humour, which isn't necessarily that funny. Am I right in saying that?
Yeah, that's very, very much.
And then the other guy's just got huge teeth.
Bigger than Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's quite enough spent on that.
It's a shame, though, because...
Don't bother seeing it.
It sounds like Up My Street.
It's a two-starer. If you've seen the trailer, don't bother.
Yeah, but it sounds like Up My Street.
Humpty Dumpty sat on a wall.
Card. Okay, competition time.
Yes.
Very exciting time of the show. Probably my favourite.
Yeah.
This is the part of the show, if you've never listened before, where we play you a mystery clip from an actor or actress performing an accent that's not necessarily their own and making a bit of a pig's ear of it.
Yeah, and mashing it up.
Yeah. So last week's accent was thus.
Pay strict attention to what I say because I choose my words carefully and I never repeat myself.
What was that, Clive? What was that? I didn't get that. He never repeats himself, and I didn't hear what he said.
So basically, that was Clive Owen in The Inside Man doing a very good example of how to start a sentence in an English accent and end it in an American accent.
It's quite hard to do.
And these answers came in their droves. Mm. Probably a Celluloid Heroes record.
Really?
Yeah, I would say there's...
That's good.
There's quite, yeah, a lot in there.
And we were talking about Spike Lee last year, and this is the film I really do like.
The actor that I said is not good enough in this is Denzel Washington.
Yeah.
So, reveal.
Tiffany at straw.button.
Okay, it's a Twitter one. Okay, well, we just have Tiffany, but well done, Tiffany.
Well done, Tiff.
So, yeah, it's time to scratch. Shall I do the scratch card?
Yeah.
Okie dokie. Let's get going. So, Tiffany, what I'm going to do here is I'm going to take a coin, any coin, doesn't matter, and I'm going to scratch off the sort of top layer of this scratch card. And if you get three numbers the same, then you win said amount of money. So your first ones are £1, 50p, 10p, 50p, £50 even, £1,000, £5,000, £1.
You could well win a quid here.
Exciting. Oh, we got a winner.
Oh, well done, Tiff.
Tiffany.
We should have a sort of a winning jingle there.
We should. Well, let's play the fanfare.
That's
there
better.
You go. That's better.
Well done, Tiffany. So
Tiffany, yeah. You won a pound. I'll just wait for this fanfare to come on with it.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Reminds me of quid. Makes me feel all Christmassy, that fanfare, doesn't
Broken
it?
Broken even. Yeah, it does, yeah.
Exactly. So Tiffany, that's not where it ends.
No.
Don't worry. Don't go
if
running
anything,
to the bank.
That's where it begins.
Don't go running out to the shops and spending all your hard earned money now.
No.
Because there's more to come.
Yeah, and a pack of Haribo is no longer a quid, so don't even
Is it not?
No, it's a quid
Haribo.
10 at least. And unless you're in Smith's and it's
Other gum
two quid.
Sweets are available.
Other gelatine-based
So
sweets.
Hopefully, if you could get a good film as well, come on, dig it out. DVD bag.
Ooh,
it is.
The Bourne Ultimatum.
It's a great film, The Bourne Ultimatum.
All you have to do now is buy The Bourne Identity
and
The Bourne Supremacy.
You've got to buy two more films.
Yeah.
But then, congratulations.
And
we'll
a quid
will
get you closer
and,
to
we'll pop that in the post to you with your winning scratch card.
Well done.
If you're, you know, in an absolute rage listening, if you're on the tube and you think you're going to smash up the windows because you're so angry that you didn't win, don't worry, sit back down, take a deep breath, and just thank your lucky stars that you've got
another chance
to win. So tell us who you think this could be.
If you can make God bleed, then people will cease to believe in him.
Scary.
And there will be blood in the water.
Oh, dear.
And the sharks will come.
Such a nothing line.
Who are these sharks?
It doesn't even
they
make sense.
They must be demons.
So if you think that you know who that is, go to celluloidheroesradio.com/competition. You can also tweet us at Twitter. What is it? At My Celluloid Hero.
There it is.
Or you can go to facebook.com/celluloidheroes. So lots of ways to do it. Or you
Oodles
can also email if you want to.
Yeah.
Which is competition@celluloidheroesradio.com. So lots of different ways you can send in your answers. We'll play that again for you at the end of the show.
We
and you can listen
will.
On our website as many times as you like.
I still have to say, ages ago I said I'd put the DVD being there into the pillowcase.
Okay.
Still not in there yet.
Still not in there.
But
well,
it will go.
For next week.
Yeah, it will
but
be in
congratulations,
there,
Tiffany. And good luck, everyone else.
Yeah.
Hey, this is Philip Seymour Hoffman, and you're listening to Celluloid Heroes Radio.
Okay, right, I'll just quickly go through
Cars 2,
the sequel that nobody asked for.
No one asked for.
So John Lasseter has taken the directorial reins again for the first time since Cars 1.
Yeah.
So, you know,
everyone
knows Cars was the first time that everyone went, what? Pixar made a bad film. What's going on here?
Yeah.
But, you know, I didn't think Cars was that bad. It was definitely the worst so far.
I fell asleep in it.
But, well, let's see. So Cars returns with its cast of Owen Wilson and Larry the Cable Guy. Now we have on board Emily Mortimer, Michael Caine and Eddie Izzard.
Great.
And the basic story is that
Tom
Mater, that really annoying tow truck from the first one, he is now the main character. Lightning McQueen pretty much isn't. Through a convoluted chain of events, they go to the World Grand Prix, which is sort of in lots of cities all around the world. And Mater gets mistaken for a British spy by the British intelligence officer Finn McMissile, played by Michael Caine. And they think that he's a you know American CIA undercover operative. and there's this sort of conspiracy that's going on. The grand that the races are owned by this mogul, oil mogul, if you can have an oil mogul, voiced by Eddie Izzard, who's sort of pirating this new environmentally friendly fuel, basically. And so, I mean, it's still aesthetically way ahead of the game. Pixar are still the people to beat, but the charm and the sort of acute attention to detail in terms of storytelling is completely absent. It's dazzling in places, but there's lots of, you know, it's just a little bit of a, it's just smacks of a film made by a head of a massive studio because there weren't enough people around to say, actually, no, that doesn't work. Mm. And the fundamental problem with Cars is that anthropomorphized cars don't really work.
But that's it, isn't it? Because that's why I didn't like the first one. But I must say, when the great thing, as Lester said, with the Cars, is you could take the second one anywhere, which is why they turned it into a spy movie rather than a film about racing.
Exactly.
You know, which is fair enough. But as you said,
And so there's Cars John Lester absolutely loves Cars. You can tell. You know, there's lots of little jokes about like puns on racing drivers' names. There's cameos from Mark Webber, Lewis Hamilton, loads and loads of.
What's Big Ben called it?
It's called Big Ben.
No, it's not.
Is it not?
Big Bentley.
Oh, is it? That's funny. And he's called John Lasseter Tire and stuff like that. Well, I'll come on to Big Ben. So basically, it sort of does that thing in children's films of squeezing everything you know about a country into as many shots as you can.
Yeah.
Oh, we're in Paris. Let's have people riding around with baguettes in front of the Eiffel Tower. We're in London. Let's have bobbies and red top buses in front of Big Ben. And, you know, it's Japan. Everything's, you know, so crazy and small and technologically advanced. And the biggest problem with it, that apart from the fact that these cars don't, like you can't really sort of identify with their characters at all, is that it's quite self-indulgent. There's a worrying amount of product placement. Like I can sort of, I've written about this review already, but I can sort of handle a plot line about a Ferrari or something, if it's a plot point. But there's loads of cars that are like, the new Fiat Punto and stuff. Mm. Obviously, like Fiat 500s and sort of sporty foreign hatchbacks and stuff. And it's a little bit too sort of, there shouldn't be enough product, as much product placement. I mean, some people have a problem with that in Toy Story, but that has to happen in Toy Story because they are toys.
Mm.
You know, and that's sort of, he's doing the same thing with this, but it's a little bit more blatant and a little bit more cynical. But the biggest problem with it overall, this is the last thing I'll say, is Toll Mader, voiced by Larry the Cable Guy, is the most annoying character that they've ever created. And he's like, people have been comparing him to people like Jar Jar Binks. He's just infuriatingly stupid and cretinous. And there's a sort of message for the kids at the end of about individuality and stuff, but you don't really buy it. And there's a very drab climax in the bell tower of Big Ben. I know Big Ben's actually the bell in the tower is not called Big Ben. Yes, Big I know Ben-ly. Before you write in.
Yeah.
And and I was quite bored actually.
Sure.
And it's a real low watermark for Pixar. And Brave is a bit of a gamble, the next one. And I really hope that
they've also got Monsters University, which will be a stone cold.
That'll be right. I mean, that's Leo Roach is doing that as well, but I just think that's the problem with it, that people didn't have the balls to say to John Lester, this doesn't work.
Fair enough, but one thing it does work with Cars, which is interesting, is kids love them. They love it.
Really?
They love it. Yeah.
I didn't find. I mean, I saw it in a press screening with lots of sort of middle-aged critics, so I didn't really. See that.
No, I've heard from many sources that kids love the first one, so they'll probably love this one. So maybe they do connect with Cars, and maybe children do find this cretin, and I believe he's an absolute cretin. Yeah. I hated him from watching
the trailer on Cars. He suffers from like the way that Homer Simpson is in any Simpsons like post season 10, where he's just so ridiculously stupid.
Yeah. Joey from Friends is another one.
Yeah, or you just can't identify with him because, you know, if you were actually that stupid, you would be in a home.
Yeah, and it seems quite stereotypical.
It is a shame. I mean, I had a sort of bad feeling about it as soon as I saw the trailer, but anyway.
Yeah. Hey ho.
It was a question on your lips, and that was dribbling down your chin. You simply have to know, or you'll be straight back on the gin. The coronet. What's in the studio bin now?
a red biro, must be empty. A battery pack, that's a packet of batteries. And the remains of Ratatouille.
What's in the studio bin?
Okay, that was the sort of provincial French snack as opposed to the Pixar film.
Yes, yeah.
Okay, right, should we do Beginners, which is a new indie, in inverted commas, film by Mike Mills. We'll end with Beginners, exactly. So this is a sort of quite low-key film starring Ewan McGregor, Christopher Plummer and Melanie Laurent, who most people will know from Inglourious Basterds.
Oh, she's so attractive.
She's lovely, and she was at the Q&A after this, which I went to.
Is she German
or
French?
Much fell in love with her. No, she's French. She's a very established star in France, but she sort of stepped onto the world stage with aplomb in Tarantino's last.
And Jonathan's surname's Jesse's French as well. I don't know why I asked. Yeah.
And so basically, the plot is it's quite autobiographical from Mills. This is actually his story. Okay. We have Ewan McGregor plays a guy called Oliver who lives in LA, and he is a graphic designer who's sort of, his life's going a little bit nowhere. He sort of has trouble with relationships. He pushes people away quite easily. His mother dies. That's, and his father, played by Christopher Plummer, takes this as an opportunity to come out at the age of, I think, about 74.
Oh, come out of the closet.
Come out of the closet, yeah.
Oh,
so he's basically he's been married for 40 years, and he did sort of love his wife, but now he can finally say
free man.
That he's gay. And this is a clip of how he sort of very much immerses himself in the gay culture
scene
that California has to offer.
Oliver?
Yeah?
I'm not sorry I woke you.
I went to Akbar tonight.
You did?
Yeah, no, they had some wonderfully loud
music. What kind of music's that?
Probably house music.
House music. Okay. House music.
So as you can tell, as you can tell from that, Christopher Plummer is absolutely great.
It sounds a bit like a similar sort of performance Peter O'Toole plays in Venus.
I suppose this is a little bit more melancholy because, as he actually finds out at the same time that he comes out that he has terminal cancer.
Oh dear.
So this is a, sort of another reason for him sort of living his life basically after 70 years of not being who he was really. Oliver has to deal with this. At the same time, Holly he meets a very sort of enigmatic young actress called Anna, played by Marilyn Laurent, and they sort of fall in love and have this, you know, quite sort of you know, it's a quite a strange relationship. Like, he's obviously way out of his comfort zone, but there's something sort of sparky and, you know, very alive about her that he absolutely loves. And it's very warm and quite funny, lots of laughs. It's very indie in its sensibility. There's lots of sort of still shots of, there's the scene at the beginning where he goes like, this is 1997, this is what the president looks like. And it's sort of stills, this is my dog and stuff. And
this is McGregor doing an American
and
accent.
And yeah, he does an American accent, which he can't do.
No, he
never has been able to do. But, you know, the films...
Keep trying.
In films where... That are very good. You often overlook that fact.
Yeah, and that's the same of many people.
But you can really tell that it's a very personal story to him, especially dealing with this dual thing of his father having cancer and also coming out. And it's really moving. And there's these 70s flashback stops for him with him and his mother when he was a kid, and she taking him around these galleries and stuff. And it's really good. It's sort of in that anachronistic style means you don't really get bogged down by the terminal cancer story. It's told sort of the love story, and it is actually set, I think, just after the death of his father.
Okay.
And then, but it sort of intercuts with his father's last days, sort of thing.
So
as soon as it starts to get a little bit drab and depressing, it cuts back to this sort of life affirming. And actually, it has quite a lot in common with McGregor's last film, Perfect Sense, that we'll review when it comes out in September.
Yeah.
But that sort of, you know, that juxtaposition of something terrible happening at the same time as something blossoming, which is really beautiful and life affirming.
Okay.
And it's really great. And, you know, Oliver, and he has this great relationship with his dog and stuff, and it's just a lovely little film. And I know some people that go think it's pretentious, but it's not. It's really not.
No.
And Mike Mills is a really great director, and the drawings as well are really cool that Oliver draws, because they're sort of a insight into his sort of mental state and his loneliness, and their actual draw. I think Mike Mills taught Ewan McGregor how to draw in that certain style. Okay. And it's really great. I really loved it. I came out with a big smile on my face.
Oh, good.
And
do you think there might even be a sort of little supporting nod for Plummer?
I don't think so, because I can't see the film. I mean, the film's already come out in America.
It's been and gone.
I don't think. I mean, I'd love him to, because I haven't actually. He's a very serious director, and we were talking to Mike Mills about it afterwards, about how he's really one for scripting. He's a stage actor. He's all about the text and stuff like that. Yeah. And he really seemed to give himself over to this, and properly, do it in a sort of method acty kind of way. And he's playing a 74-year-old in this, but Christopher Plummer's well into his 80s now.
Yeah.
I think he's like 85.
Yeah, he's old.
He's really, really great, and I recommend it. Probably the film of the week, I'd say.
Yeah.
Up there with Potter.
Yeah, you got to put Potter up there. There are two films we didn't see. Hobo with a Shotgun, which was only released in 11 screens around the UK.
Yeah.
And The Big Picture, which is the film I think I touched on last week.
I thought that was out on this Friday.
Or maybe it's out. Let's hope it's out this Friday. Let's hope it's out this Friday,
yeah.
Because I'm very excited about that.
Okay.
But I think I'm going to be spending most of my time watching other stuff.
Yeah, sure.
I haven't been to the zoo in ages, so I'm looking forward
to
it.
Yeah, oh yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Zookeeper, you've been evading your forfeit.
I've got
like a coward.
I've got two forfeits.
What's the one afterwards?
I don't know yet. I don't even know yet.
That's pretty much it. We'll take you through the DVD top 10 before we go.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we'll start at number 10,
right.
Which is Yogi Yogi Bear, which is Dan Aykroyd and Justin Timberlake arsing around in a crap film. we've had quite enough of that.
Yeah.
Number nine,
The Hangover, the whole grain bread.
And
Due Date, which I think is... leapfrogged its whole grain bread, the juicy filling of the Hangover sandwich.
So it's not really a sandwich anymore. It's sort of a very sloppy
panini
club sandwich with the top falling off.
Panini.
In at number seven, this has gone down fast, The Adjustment Bureau, down from number two last week, but it looks like it's slipping out of the charts.
Yeah.
Number six is Paul, which is doing quite well due to its great DVD extra content.
Sticking around,
great little Star Wars parody videos and things on it, and good commentaries.
Yeah.
Number five, Drive Angry. Actually, someone wrote us in a little review of this, but I don't know where it is, but someone saw it and said it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, but that's what I thought. I thought it was a bit... it looked, to begin with, like, oh. And then it looked a bit sort of, a bit grindhouse, a bit sort of bit of fun. So hopefully that's right.
Number four, you're not going to like this.
I'm disgusted. I'm actually disgusted. I can't. It's still in there. Another Hood.
Yeah, I think it's because its main audience are probably people who are too young to get into the cinema version.
I thought,
and have to stay in and watch it while smoking some illegal jazz cigarettes.
I thought the main audience would have stolen it rather than bought it. But there we are. At least pirated it. But
now
never mind.
That is a stereotype.
Yes.
Number three, new entry.
There are many in Another Hood. So
yeah, Ironclad.
Which almost I sort of want to see now.
Neither of us saw it, did we?
No, Paul Giamatti.
Yeah. In at number two, for obvious reasons, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 1. We're not going to talk about that.
Nope.
And a new entry at number one, really?
Yeah.
Who's been buying this? Los Angeles.
Must have been from your raving review.
Which is terrible. Terrible film. Number one, incredibly boring. It's almost as bad as the last hour of the film that cannot be named.
I'm Stonker.
Or you stinker.
What's a stonker?
Mr. Stinker.
Hello, old friend.
So,
regular listeners will know that is the jingle for the stinker and the stonker.
But we're not
an
doing
item
that
we abandoned.
Yeah.
So we've been trying to think of a good name for the regular item that has become your best and worst films. And I've been racking my brains. I even recorded a jingle that I wasn't happy with and got rid of it. And then we just realised that a good name for this item might be The Stinker and The Stonker, seeing as they are your best and worst films. And this week we've been talking about schools, seeing it's the end of Harry Potter. And it's, there were some people mucking about in a school or something. So we'll just read out a few of your best and worst school movies from Twitter. So I'll start with Gary Hanna, long-time listener, first-time tweeter. Well, not first-time tweeter.
Not quite.
He says, can I crowbar Back to the Future into school movies? Yes, you can. Why not?
Yeah.
And The Breakfast Club and Days of Confused.
I love The Breakfast Club.
It is. I actually rewatched The Breakfast Club this week.
So good,
he also sent another one saying, another one that deserves a mention is The Virgin Suicides and Mean Girls. Ooh. Bit of a guilty pleasure.
Fair enough. Fair enough, Gary. Okay, so also, Georgie Lucas, or Georgina Sophile, or Sophiel is, I think, a Twitter name. She put Clueless.
Yep.
She also put Mean Girls, and why not High School Musical?
Okay. This is one from Jane, who's Drinkers Dutch on Twitter.
Yeah.
I've always dithered as to which movie I like best, St. Elmo's Fire or The Breakfast Club. I can never choose. No, I don't know St. Elmo's Fire, but another one for The Breakfast Club. Lots more for The Breakfast Club. Donnie Darko from Colin Manginis.
Dokesy put The Breakfast Club as well, just to let you know. This is the French, the Exquisite La Boom.
Okay. La Boom, Boom, B-O-U-M, as in party.
B-O-U-M, yeah.
Yeah.
Did I get that right?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I'm Pratsley French. H. Cobb 85, whoever that is, put in surely American Pie.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
American Pie 2. Not for me. Rob Grumpazoid, another regular tweeter.
Yeah.
I love School Ties starring Brendan Fraser, Matt Damon and Ben Affleck. Long before they were famous. He's also quite fond of Superbad. Should I be ashamed?
No, absolutely not.
Well,
Hair Man.
I disagree.
Well, Hair Man says Shudders, School of Rock.
But yeah,
I think that's...
Well, that's funny you should say that, because Jennifer Baby wrote back, School of Rock, I quite like it personally,
yeah,
and
so
I quite like it as well.
So do I. So
Richard Linklater.
Surely Hairman, you can't shudder here. And you put Hot Chick.
Yeah, the Hot Chick's
personally,
definitely... We'll do a couple more bad ones. HCOB 85 that you just read out is a good one. He says, I think he might mean this for a good one, Kindergarten Cop.
It's a classic.
The impending Glee 3D from someone else.
Oh, I tell you what, I is my favourite, and it's from Hairman, and I'll read this out. It goes, Ferris Bueller and Election, life turning full circle for Matthew Broderick. And obviously, yeah. Ferris Bueller is an obvious one, but Election is a fantastic film.
Yeah.
Must see it.
A couple of people said If as well, which is another really great one. Mm. That would be mine, and obviously Ferris Bueller and The Breakfast Club.
There's Hamlet 2, which is underrated, but not great, but it's underrated because it's pan, but it's not that bad.
Yeah.
Nativity is not good.
Mm. Okay, so thanks very much for all of them. We're sorry we couldn't read them all out. We'll have another topic for you next week. But there's nothing to do this week apart from say thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you next week with
Should we listen to the accent once more?
Yeah, we'll just give you one quick reminder of that.
If you can make God bleed, then people will cease to believe in him. And there will be blood in the water. And the sharks will come.
Load of mumbo jumbo.
Yeah, complete mumbo jumbo.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you think you know who that is, go to cellularheroesradio.com/competition. So that's it from us this week. We'll be back next week with things like Captain America, the First Avenger. We'll have Horrid Henry. We'll have...
I'm going to watch The Big Picture.
The Big Picture.
Which is a song.
And then we'll see what
French.
Else we can come up with. You've probably got to see The Zookeeper at some point. We'll try and
still
do that.
Still not out yet.
But thanks very much for listening.
Yeah,
and
thank
we'll
you.
See you all next week.
Yeah.
Also, if you enjoy the show, go to iTunes and rate 5-star.
Yeah, and finally, we had a bit. We tweeted a bit about it, but the hour is good. But it's not Mad Men. It's not bad advertising. It's not set in the 60s. I suppose there's a slight similarity in style, but it's good. It's very interesting, and it's written by Abby Morgan, who's written The Iron Lady, and has also written the Birdsong screenplay, which is filming
yeah,
now.
Yeah, I've heard
so
about
that. So she's fantastic.
Good stuff. All right, thanks very much for listening. See you next week.
Bye.